Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Senator Ted Cruz joins us to talk about the southern border crisis. And Nikki Haley announces her president. As always, you can email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA. Support our show, charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. It seems to be official. Two official things. Tom Brady retiring. We will talk about that. That is less important to the future of our civilization. But Nikki Haley seems to be running for president of the United States. With a scoop last evening, the media is reporting that Nikki Haley is going to announce for the presidency on February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day. You see, a couple years ago, Nikki Haley was really looked at as the future of American conservatism. Objectively, she was a very conservative governor of South Carolina. That is true. However, she would always go out of her way to try to pander to media narratives, and Donald Trump selected her to be the ambassador to the United Nations. When she went and became the ambassador to the United Nations, that's where I personally started to find a lot of disagreement with Nikki Haley. Let me say this before we go any further. I've actually had a very warm relationship with Nikki Haley. I know her son. She has spoke at Turning Point USA events. I have nothing negative to say about my interactions with her. She just recently spoke at a Turning Point USA chapter meeting in Clemson. I'm certainly not supporting her for the presidency in 2024. We're going to talk about that, but I find it very interesting. I find her candidacy interesting for a couple reasons, because it does show that despite all the bad news, I think the party is changing for the better. Because a couple years ago, even prior to Donald Trump, somebody like Nikki Haley would have automatically been accepted as a consensus top-tier candidate. But Nikki Haley, I'm sure you could find an article, somebody could, of Nikki Haley 2016 or 2018, 2020 presidential poll, some poll that somebody did of favorability. She used to be one of the most popular Republican figures out there. And she is no longer. Now, she could, again, and I'm going to walk through how I think we should not underestimate Nikki Haley. I think she's very talented. She'll raise a ton of money. And she works, man. I'm telling you, she is ambitious. Do not underestimate her. But I find it interesting what happened to the popularity that Nikki Haley once enjoyed. Let's go to a couple pieces of tape here. Let's see Nikki Haley here talking to Bret Baier. Cut 50 2 weeks ago. Nikki Haley teasing that she's going to run for president. Now we know she is. Play cut 50.
But when you're looking at a run for president, you look at two things. You first look at, does the current situation push for new leadership? The second question is, am I that person that could be that new leader? Yes, we need to go in a new direction. And can I be that leader? Yes, I think I can be that leader. I've never lost a race. I said that then. I still say that now. I'm not going to lose now, but stay tuned.
52, she continues and says, it's time for a new generation to lead. Play cut 52.
The survival of America matters, and it's bigger than one person. And when you're looking at the future of America, I think it's time for new generational change. I don't think you need to be 80 years old to go be a leader in D.C. I think we need a young generation to come in, step up, and really start fixing things.
So Nikki Haley running for president shows that Donald Trump is going to have some serious competitors, competition. Now, Nikki Haley is not going to resonate with the grassroots base immediately. She's going to raise a pile of money, though, a ton of money. I can say this as somebody who has been very blessed to raise a fair amount of money at Turning Point USA and Turning Point Action and Turning Point PAC and been around the conservative donor space for 10 years, and I listen to what they have to say, and I agree in some and I disagree some, but Nikki Haley is definitely a consensus candidate for the American conservative donor class. They love Nikki Haley. And I'm curious, what do you guys think of Nikki Haley? I want to hear from you. freedom@charliekirk.com. I'll read some of your emails. But Nikki Haley is going to raise a ton of money. She's going to work very hard. Now, where she's going to run into some trouble is the grassroots side of things. Doing big events, doing big rallies, drawing crowds. I don't think that is going to be a strong suit for her. But Nikki Haley entering this race is she's going to try to carve out a lane. She is now the first announced candidate of somebody that is going to try to scoop up tens of millions of dollars of donor money, having a 527 on the outside, a super PAC to run ad assistance, to run against Donald Trump, even though he put her in a position of power, which is going to be a very perplexing thing for a lot of us. Like, wait a second, weren't you ambassador to UN because Donald Trump empowered you? Okay. And maybe there was a lot of just naked opportunism there. I don't know. But it'll be fascinating to watch how she is going to explain why you're able to win straw polls amongst donors. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. You need the support of donors, but not with the actual mass amount of voters. And there's tons of examples of this. There's plenty of examples, I should say, of people like Nikki Haley that seem when it gets tough and there's a lot of pressure, she doesn't always make the right decision. For example, Nikki Haley said this with the George Floyd situation. We spent the last couple of days celebrating our son's graduation. Tonight, I turned on the news and I'm heartbroken. It's important to understand that the death of George Floyd was personal and painful for many. In order to heal, it needs to be personal and painful for everyone. That sounds very left-wing, personal and painful for everyone. She also said that it was a mistake to follow Donald Trump when it came to January 6th. It seemed as if there was this pattern, there was this theme that she was just waiting to jump ship. However, I will say that my greatest disagreement with her is in the area of foreign policy. Nikki Haley is a cheerleader for the military-industrial complex. She sat on the board of Boeing right after leaving. In fact, she might still sit on the board of Boeing. Maybe she resigned recently. But she certainly sat on the board of Boeing at some point. She has been enthusiastic about trying to escalate tensions with Ukraine and now, of course, cheerleading us sending weapons to Ukraine. Nikki Haley is going to try to carve out a lane for neoconservatives against Donald Trump. That's actually only going to help Donald Trump. Again, Nikki Haley being someone that I've never had a cross word with and someone who's actually been sweet enough to speak at our events, so I'm going to be very precise in how I say this, but she is very wrong in her continual embrace of neoliberalism. Cut 51, Nikki Haley says, legal immigrants are more patriotic than most Americans these days. Play cut 51.
You know, I mean, my parents came here because they wanted a better life for their family. And they came here with $8 in their pocket. They came here legally. They came here the right way. And, you know, they look now at what's happening and they're offended by those people that are coming illegally. But I'll tell you, the most amazing part of all of it is legal immigrants are more patriotic than most Americans these days because they appreciate how wonderful this country is. They appreciate that if you work hard, you can be anything you want to be. And there was not a day that went by that my parents didn't remind my brothers, my sister, and me how blessed we were to be in this country.
Now, to be fair, that can be true. And that is true for some immigrants. I could say that the Ukrainian immigrants I was just spending time with in Santa Barbara, they do love America more than most Americans. However, that's not true of all immigrants. That's not true of Somalis. That's not true of a lot of the third world immigrants that come here that don't have any heart for assimilation to speak our language, share our culture, understand our values or our history. That kind of blanket neoliberal talking point is an abstraction that is very harmful to actually having prudent immigration policy. And also, it just sounds rather insulting to native-born Americans. It just does. It just sounds a little bit like, why don't you love America as much as somebody else? Not a messaging twist that I would engage with. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Why do I tell you about Balance in Nature every single day? It's really quite simple. Balance in Nature is real food. It's real science and it's real nutrition. I take it every day. It's so easy. 31 whole fruits and veggies in a capsule. I know a lot of people who take supplements and formulated nutrition packs, but Balance in Nature goes right to the source. Real fruits and veggies, all that nutrition captured with their advanced vacuum cold process, packed in a capsule and sent to your doorstep. I give my body what it needs because feeling great is important to me. Getting good daily nutrition is the foundation of all aspects of good health. And that is why you hear me talking about Balance of Nature on my show. Shipping is always free, but don't forget to get a 35% off your first order as a preferred customer by using discount code Charlie when you go to balanceofnature.com. You can order by phone by calling 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com. They're a terrific product. I take it every day. Check it out. Balanceofnature.com, discount code Charlie. Balanceofnature.com, discount code Charlie. It seems to be a little bit of maybe semantic focus, but it is important. Settlers are people that come to a largely undeveloped area and build something new. Now, when I say this, people go nuts in the media because they say, oh, what are you trying to say? That the indigenous people and the Native Americans didn't have anything here. They had something, but it was not largely developed the way that Europe was developed. And so my ancestors who came over, Alphonsus Kirk in 1620, built a new nation from scratch. That is what a settler is. A settler comes and there is not a constitution, a government, rule of law, infrastructure, buildings, capitals. You have to basically go at it new. An immigrant, nothing wrong necessarily with this, but it's a fact. An immigrant comes to something that is already built. An immigrant comes to something that is already functioning, that is already flourishing. And so saying that we are a nation of immigrants is not correct. The large amount of people that came in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, even early 1900s came to a largely undeveloped country. Even in 1849, when people came into America in huge numbers to go into the gold rush, California, the golden state, was largely undeveloped. Now, why is this important? This kind of repeated incantation that started with John Fitzgerald Kennedy, JFK, saying we're a nation of immigrants, led to the segue of then 10 Kennedy negotiating and bartering this immigration act that allowed legal immigration to grow to great levels. Immigration can be a net asset to a nation. Currently, it is not. The way we do immigration in our country, way too many people don't share our values, no assimilation. We are originally a nation of settlers, not of immigrants. And that's why I've advocated for a moratorium for quite some time. We got to slow this down and figure out who we want in our country and prioritize our own citizens first. Okay, here's Nikki Haley saying, I don't know that I've talked to a single person that has denied the election results. Play cut 73.
So if they deny those election results, though, you don't think that's a disqualifier?
I don't know that I've talked to anyone that's denied the election results. Everybody that I'm helping acknowledges the fact that the elections, you know, were real.
She does not know a single person that has denied the election results. I actually probably believe her because I don't think she's necessarily in touch with grassroots. Someone says here, Charlie, I find it a very hard to believe that Nikki Haley is very popular with the conservative donor class. Well, she is. She's incredibly popular. And she's going to raise a ton of money. And so Nikki Haley's candidacy is going to be the first of many. Mike Pence is probably going to run. Mike Pompeo is probably going to run. Maybe Kristi Noem. Asa Hutchinson. I just think it would be hilarious to have him run for president. Former governor of Arkansas. It's terrible. Ron DeSantis looks like he's probably going to run. All indications point that way. And Donald Trump is being really smart, by the way. Donald Trump saying, I hope all these people run. Yes, the more muddied that kind of lane becomes, the better it is for Donald Trump. A one-on-one, Trump versus an opposition candidate is a tougher lift than Trump versus 10 or 15 or 16. Remember, back in 2016, Donald Trump had an advantage because there were just so many candidates. So many candidates. And this race is about to heat up. We are a year out from Iowa. A year from now, right now, on this program, we're going to be covering the Iowa caucus. We're going to be covering the New Hampshire primary. We're going to be covering the South Carolina primary. It's happening a year from now. The first presidential debates are this summer. That's right. The first presidential debate is scheduled between anywhere in late July or early August. It's going to be happening really quick, everybody. And we are now already into the second month of this year. Somebody just emailed us, you've got to be kidding me. No, we're in 2023. This is where it starts to heat up. And yes, I do agree. Our elections are too long. I think it's exhausting. It's nauseating. The winners are the consultants. They make so much money off of this. Oh, the permanent consultant class makes so much money on the ads and all the permanent infrastructure and their consultant fees. It's a year and a half election. It's not good for the country. It isn't. You need kind of like a healing point or just like a boiling down period where you're just like, I'm not going to think about politics for a couple months. Can we do anything but politics? But instead now it's all this palace intrigue and this drama. It's not going away. Our show is going to be on the forefront of all of it. But the entrance of Nikki Haley, I just find this very interesting. And I'll close with this. A couple years ago, she was the darling of the conservative movement. The most in demand, the highest stock. And a couple years later, polls are showing she's between 2 to 3% approval rating. How that happened, I have some theories, but I do find it fascinating. Based on your emails, there is no mass love for Nikki Haley here in our audience. I want to talk about ReliefFactor.com. I want you guys to check out ReliefFactor.com, 100% drug-free, knee pain, back pain, joint pain, elbow pain. Check out Relief Factor Energy. Help makes your body make nutrients readily available. Relief Factor Sleep. I know a lot of you are probably having trouble sleeping. Relief Factor Sleep could be the best solution for you. Everybody goes to bed. Not everybody sleeps. We're all about helping people live lives that are filled with connection, exploration, passion, and emotion. That is what life is all about. Make sure you guys are sleeping well. It's a major part of life. Check it out right now. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Senator Ted Cruz joins us now. Senator, welcome back to the program. You are calling for a quick impeachment of Mayorkas. Walk us through it.
Well, Charlie, great to be with you. Alejandro Mayorkas has done the worst job imaginable as Secretary of Homeland Security. Under his tenure, we have seen the worst illegal immigration in the history of our country. Just last month, we had the highest illegal immigration ever recorded in a single month in the history of the United States of America. And it's not simply that Mayorkas won't do his job. If he had utterly abdicated his responsibility, if he did nothing, if he just sat on a chair and spun, that would be better than what he's been doing. Because doing nothing at least wouldn't do affirmative damage. Instead, what he is doing is he is actively defying federal law. He is actively flouting federal immigration law. He is directing those under his control not only not to secure the border, not only not to deport people coming here illegally, but he is directing them to expedite people coming here illegally, to process them more quickly, to make it a faster process. So the 5.4 million people that have crossed under Joe Biden's presidency, he wants to more than double that number. He wants to get faster and process. Alejandro Mayorkas today is the world's largest human trafficker. His business model is funding the Mexican cartels to the tune of billions of dollars as they bring in fentanyl and opioids that are killing Americans, as they sexually assault little kids, as they rape women, as they leave immigrants in the desert to die. Mayorkas, his priority is making their operations even more efficient so they can make more money, because he looks at all of the people coming as potential Democrat voters. And for him, politics matters more than following the law. The House should impeach him, and the American people should see and hear the facts of the horrors that are unfolding on our southern border.
That is the best summary I've heard. And Senator, the way you describe it, that he's actively undermining the national security interest, the sovereignty, yep, and rule of law. It would be better if he was a lazy bum bureaucrat. I mean, we almost want just a paper shuffler. What you're saying, Senator, is that he's actually burning the midnight oil. He is working,
yes,
against the country.
It is, this administration is all politics all the time. And they do not care about the Biden body bags. They do not care about the 53 illegal aliens who cooked in a tractor trailer outside San Antonio, including children who died of the heat. That doesn't matter, in part because they know their cronies in the corporate media, they don't care either. So they're not going to report on it. And the frustrating thing, Charlie, the folks that listen to your podcast, the folks that listen to my podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz, they know what's going on. Because the folks that are listening to these pods are smart, are engaged, are learning the facts. But what is infuriating is there are millions upon millions of Americans who are living their lives and who turn on the corporate media. They turn on CNN. Well, they're not millions of people turning on CNN. They're like six lonely people turning on CNN. But there are people turning on ABC and CBS and NBC. And they don't know what's happening at the border. We no longer have a functioning media in this country because the corporate media today views their mission as they are propagandists. So if you ask, you know, an ordinary suburban mom who just, you know, watches Good Morning America, she has no clue that Joe Biden has presided over the worst humanitarian history on our southern border in the history of the United States of America.
And so do you think, so let's say the House impeaches him. I don't think the Senate will. But what you're saying, though, Senator, I'm guessing what your answer will be, the trial is worth it. I mean, he'll probably be acquitted.
Yes.
But then Schumer would have to take it up. How does that work then?
Well, unfortunately, starting with the end point, you are right that he will be acquitted. In order to impeach someone in the House, it takes a majority in the House. In order to convict them, it takes two-thirds in the Senate. Many folks learned that for the first time on the two failed impeachment trials of Donald Trump. And my podcast Verdict was launched the first day of the first impeachment trial to explain to folks what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. It takes two-thirds to convict and to remove from office. There are 51 yes. Democrats out of the 100 senators. That means we would need to get a whole bunch of Democrats to vote to convict. The chances of that happening, I can give you a precise and exact number, are 0.000%. It ain't going to happen because these Democrats don't care.
No, they don't.
It does not matter to them. So why do it? Why do it? Number one, because the process of impeaching him in the House forces the corporate media to cover at least some of it to tell the story. And in the Senate, look, Schumer is going to try to give as little time and attention to this as possible. And you and I both very much wish that Republicans had won the Senate this election so that we would have ball control and have the ability to have a real and extended trial. Schumer will try to cut things short as much as possible. But the value of bringing the case, of bringing the impeachment, is to prosecute the case to the American people, to tell the story that if the media were doing their jobs, people would know. And it is a very potent tool, even in the face of Democrat intransigence.
Yeah. And so, Senator, you say something that the Democrats don't care. I think that's true of some of the Democrats. I think that some of the Democrats, and I know that sounds so sinister and cynical, but I think they're cheering for the continuation of open borders.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea as to why? Because as soon as you get into the why, you and I both get smeared and slandered by the media because I believe it very well might be for political reasons. But why is this, Senator? We're dealing with the invasion of a sovereign country.
So I think two things are driving it. One, what has happened to the modern Democrat Party is they have been captured by the extremes on each subject matter. So on questions of gender, today's Democrat Party is captured by the radical extremes that thinks there's no difference between a boy and a girl and it's a good idea to surgically mutilate children and cut off their genitals. Mm-hmm. That's a fringe position. That's who sets the policy for the Democrat Party. On the question of life, the Democrat Party in Washington is controlled by the radical fringe that believes in abortion up until the moment of birth and even after birth in some circumstances. That's a radical fringe position and yet the position of every Democrat in the Senate. On the question of law enforcement, the Democrat Party has been seized by the radical fringe that believes in abolishing the police and putting in George Soros DAs that release violent criminals into our neighborhoods and terrorize our families. That's a radical fringe position, and yet the Democrat agenda is driven by them. And on immigration, the Democrat Party is driven by the radical fringe that embraces open borders, that believes the very notion of having a border is wrong and immoral. Look, some of these kooks believe we ought to give half of America back to Mexico. I mean, these
Seriously, people are exactly right.
They are radical and fringe. And look, the California argument, they may have a point there, but we ain't giving up Texas, damn it.
Yes.
By the way, for the record, that's a joke. That's a joke for the record. I can already see it now. Cruz calls for giving away California.
No, but this is – if you actually – talk to some of the La Raza folks. This is a demand of theirs, and unfortunately, taking on the Democrat Party. Do you think we should also impeach Merrick Garland? Given
yes,
okay. So you do so, and I actually think that might even be more dramatic in the House. Walk us through that.
Yeah, look, I'm very glad that the House has created a committee on the politicization and weaponization of the Department of Justice. As you know, the latest book that I just wrote is called Justice Corrupted, How the Left Has Weaponized Our Legal System. And it goes through chapter and verse how first under Barack Obama and now even worse under Joe Biden, they've turned the FBI, the DOJ, the CIA, they've turned them into political weapons to target their enemies. I think Merrick Garland should be impeached because he's been the most political attorney general in history, and he's undermined the integrity of law enforcement, and that's profoundly dangerous.
I agree. Senator, please keep fighting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, my friend.
I'm sick of talking about race, aren't you? I don't think race matters. The more we talk about race, I think it gets us further away from us actually talking about things that matter: character, virtue, goodness, truth. You know, the people in charge of our society, the elites, they're going full propaganda on the Black History Month thing. And they're saying that Black History Month, very important to understand the struggle and the plight of Black Americans. Now, interestingly, you don't hear about Frederick Douglass very much or George Washington Carver. You don't hear about Clarence Thomas. But should we have a Black History Month at all? Should we have a month dedicated to a specific and singular race? Well, Black History Month only plays into this kind of overarching narrative that, of course, we've talked about it from critical race theory. First, I want to play this cut six, Harvard professor Damendi Hassan talking about how great critical race theory is. It all plays together in harmony. Play cut six.
Since when is African-American history or the teaching of it part of a political agenda?
Well, you know, Mehdi, that's complicated because I think that I'm not willing to accept, nor I think Kimberly, to accept that so-called critical race theory is a bad thing. It has literally been defined as such by a fake journalist named Christopher Rufo. In the broadest sense, this African-American studies curriculum, which is important to note, does include critical race theory, as well it should.
Morgan Freeman had some very sharp opinions on this. Morgan Freeman talking to Chris Wallace's father, Mike Wallace. Man, I don't know what year this is from. Said, we shouldn't have a Black History Month. You want to move past racial trauma? Stop talking about it. But no, the racial arsonists in charge of our society, they want us to focus on this. They want us to emphasize it. It's very profound and it's courageous. I think there's no better way to start Black History Month than letting Morgan Freeman tell us that we shouldn't have Black History Month. Play cut 58.
Black History Month you find
ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month? Come on. Tell me.
Well, I'm Jewish.
Okay, which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
You want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism?
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man.
Could you say that on television now? That's from 2005. Now, they elected a president, Barack Hussein Obama, largely on the narrative, that the foundational narrative that we're racist. Obama ran on that lie and was able to get a lot of power because of it. And white liberals who are guilty because they don't know how to talk about race or think about race, not even just white liberals, just upper middle class whites, gave away political power to a Marxist and to an entire Marxist regime on the lie that America is systemically racist. Morgan Freeman's clarity is just as profound today as it was then. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.